Hilariously, Walter was a connoisseur of many, many, many things, including shampoo.
You know, when you mentioned it, I'm like, oh my god, yeah, we always had fancy shampoo, but I didn't realize it was fancy shampoo.
I'm talking to my cousin, who I call my twin cousin, as we share the same birthday and have many similar characteristics. When we were kids, we bonded over our love of the book Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing by Judy Blume. Twin cousin's memory of my dad's fondness for expensive shampoo reminded me that fancy shampoo was a thing in my childhood home.
Coconut-flavored shampoo. I mean, it was like $30 a bottle. Boy, was my hair soft after that.
That's funny.
Now, my twin cousin and his brother, Cousin Scientist, grew up in New York City, which was the other side of my dad's cross-country pot smuggling business. And unlike me, my cousins as children picked up signs that my dad was a unique kind of entrepreneur. Entrepreneur definition: a person who organizes and operates a business or businesses, taking on greater than normal financial risks in order to do so. And although they were kids, my New York cousins had a vague understanding that their uncle was an entrepreneur taking on more than just financial risks.
So there was never too much to wonder. Whatever perspective I had, I just knew that, you know, he had money and the place smelled like weed.
I'm Rainbow Valentine. This is Disorganized Crime, Smuggler's Daughter.
A doobie, young, free, and groovy, making it up as we roll along. Rolling along, far out the country road, feeling great in the Golden Gate, dodging the law up in New York State, making it up as we
When I was growing up in the 1980s, my dad traveled frequently to New York City for work, which seemed very glamorous to me.
New York was, you know, I mean, the world of characters in that town was never ending. They have great hot dogs. You didn't realize how great a hot dog until you came out here and ate the shit that they serve and call hot dogs in California.
My childhood understanding of New York City was based on the musical Annie, about a plucky singing orphan, and the Eloise books, about a sassy almost orphan who lives in the Plaza Hotel. So as a kid, I believe slash hoped my dad was in New York City schmoozing with Broadway producers who would soon discover me tap dancing and opera singing in our Mill Valley house and launch my fantasy Broadway orphan career. Now, that never happened, because my dad was in New York City schmoozing with smugglers, not Broadway producers. The closest he got to my daydream was being the only other person at the movies with Gene Hackman.
One afternoon I go to a movie, I can't remember what movie it is, and it's a big theater and nobody's in it. It's like 2 in the afternoon, and I go up to the balcony because it's the best place to sort of sit, and there's only one other person sitting in the balcony. And that's Gene Hackman. There's nobody else in the theater but the two of us.
I was curious about what Dad was up to in New York on all those business trips. And he told me it was as much about leisure as business.
It was off and on years that I would be going to New York because that was the best place. That was where all my outlets to sell were. And so I'd go back there to oversee it or to bring money back sometimes, or just to go hang out.
Can you imagine driving around New York City with pounds of pot in your trunk? I asked my dad about this.
Driving around New York City with a carload of pot is like the stress of driving the country roads of Northern California multiplied by 1,000. No big deal. And when I'm on the country roads in California or whatever, delivering truckloads, you see maybe 3 cars in an hour. or none or whatever. So you have relatively good control of your ability to prevent an accident. In New York City, you have no control to prevent an accident because they're coming at you every which way but loose. You have no control over what they're doing and what kind of drugs they've taken and how drunk they are and whatever. And all you need is one little fender bender, I guess. I never thought of this then because you just don't think about those. You're just careful in how you drive. You know, there's a certain confidence and the belief is not that you're going to get caught. The belief is that you're just cool. Nothing's happening. If you think as a paranoid, you attract paranoid energy.
So when my dad was in New York, he had a few options of places to stay, with old childhood friends like the cameraman or at one of his sister's places. My dad has two older sisters, and my New York cousins are the children of my dad's oldest sister, another intellectual artist lemur.
Anyway, the rumors about what your dad did for a living...
Here's my cousin scientist.
Like, people ask what people do for a living. It's just a normal question that people ask.
Yeah.
So I would ask my mom, like, I would say, what does Uncle Walter do for a living? And she would say, oh, he's an entrepreneur. And I was like, wow, an entrepreneur. Mom, what's an entrepreneur? And she would say something like, oh, well, he does business. He starts businesses. He does stuff like that. And I was like, huh, okay. And I didn't really, you know, so I always thought of Walter as just this guy who was doing business here and business there. One thing that kind of... would happen is my mom, when she would get drunk or a little stoned or whatever, you know, she would start saying things about Walter, like, you want to know something? And I'd be like, what? Walter, he's like a drug dealer. And I was like, what? What does that mean? And she goes, but he's not a drug dealer. He's like one of the, you know, the higher ups. And I was like, what does that even mean?
Now, Cousin Scientist was a difficult kid, and once when he was 10, he was sent to our house in Northern California during summer vacation, where he got a total culture shock.
The culture out in Northern California was so different than the East Coast. Like, I mean, I remember your dad took us all to some hippie camp. The main memories I have about it, everybody swam around nude. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I was expected to do that, too, and it was the most horrifying, embarrassing thing I ever was involved in my entire life, before or after.
The place my cousin's referring to is Sweet Smell, a hippie family art and music camp my family used to attend in the 70s. It was like a psychedelic arts version of a Catskills family resort. According to my mom, Sweet Smell was created by the people who owned the sadly now elapsed Renaissance Pleasure Fair of Northern California, an iconic, historic, cultural event that arguably laid the groundwork for today's Burning Man Festival.
A lake. You didn't have to bring food. This guy set up a coffee place, so in the afternoon you could go have coffee and tea and schmooze, and then people taught dance and drumming, and so people brought their instruments. And then there was a rope swing on the lake for all the kids. You know, it was like a pre-runner of the sand party. But, you know, it was just a creative place to go hang out.
What? You mean Burning Man, the sand party?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
When my mom says sand party, she's referring to Burning Man. She's so cute. Now, Sweet Smell Family Camp is still operating today. It's populated by an insular clique of artists who keep the Sweet Smell's website private, along with the camp, which is invite-only these days. My mom also remembers the nude swimmers who horrified Cousin Scientist, as do I. At Sweet Smell, hippies would swim nude, and during the night they would belly dance, fully dressed, by the way, in fabulous costumes, and they'd pass a joint around the campfire. This was just totally normal.
Do you remember there being nude hippies at the beach? At the lake?
Yeah, you know, at the beach you could be naked or you could be topless, or but at you know, at dance, they had a hoofing class, a tap class, and you could go and, you know, you wore clothes for your classes.
Now, my mom clarifies this was not a nudist camp. They were just swimming naked at the, you know, lake, which was very common for hippies to swim nude. And my mom also remembers Cousin Scientist having a hard time fitting in.
I remember his diet, because he wouldn't eat anything, you know, except for hard-boiled eggs and peanuts.
Him and his fucking hard-boiled eggs. He was really funny and stubborn.
Another thing that was a culture shock for me...
Here's Cousin Scientist again.
...was all the pot that everybody was smoking. Like, I had seen a little bit of that on the East Coast, because my mom was kind of a... My mom would have been more beatnik-y or bohemian, you know, as opposed to your dad, who was clearly of, you know, the hippie class.
Now, Cousin Scientist makes a distinction between his mom being a bohemian and my dad being a hippie, which is funny because my dad is adamant he's not a hippie. And I understand what he means, because there are many different levels of hippies, just like many different levels of Christians, Muslims, punk rockers, what have you. So he is a hippie to some people, right? Like Cousin Scientist from New York City. But to my dad, who's living amongst like the hippiest of the hippies and sees them around, he is not a hippie. Hippies do not drive BMWs.
When I got back, I kind of felt like, whoa, I've seen some stuff that my friends never would have seen, you know? So as a little kid coming back, I felt like... you know, much more worldly than the other kids around. Because I've been to California and seen all the hippies in their natural habitat, you know, doing all the crazy hippie stuff that they do, swimming around nude, smoking lots of pot. And I had a weird upbringing and I walked into a weirder culture. And, you know, in the end, it was a good experience to be exposed at a young age to such a different culture. Because I think everybody should be thrown in the deep end at some point in their life.
This is hilarious to me because I felt the same awe the first time I visited New York City, admiring native New Yorkers like my cousins, naturally navigating subways, bodegas, and delis. This is Disorganized Crime. We'll be right back. Now, another discovery this podcast has uncovered is learning that throughout his 22-year smuggling career, my dad was supporting his family of origin on the East Coast as well. Here's my twin cousin again.
He would stay with us, but he would spend a lot of money when he was with us. Walter fixed my mom's car up, got it all fixed up, took it to the mechanic, got everything done, paid for everything. He also helped my mom buy an apartment in the Bronx in the 80s, which we lived in for many years.
Generosity has always been second nature to my dad. He gave away a lot of his money to artists, friends, family, and while there's no more extra money today and hasn't been for years, it's nice to know that while he had it, he shared the wealth.
For me, was has always been important to be able to share the wealth, sometimes a little too much. it felt really good to be able to help her out. And so I bought her an apartment and then had Hi-Fi remodel it. I mean, opened it up, blah, blah, all the stuff, because I was into... remodeling and building.
Your dad was very generous with my mom.
Here's my cousin Scientist.
So, and not only that, Hi-Fi came over and redid one of the bathrooms. So, as far as I knew at the time, Hi-Fi was your dad's carpenter friend.
Now, while we know Hi-Fi as my dad's trusted guy in New York City who my dad left on the battlefield, Cousin Scientist saw Hi-Fi as simply my dad's carpenter friend. In the 80s, my dad visited New York a lot for business, and he would share more than just money with his family. Pot was as common as furniture, where we're from. and Dad would leave some of it for his sisters. A prime opportunity for my bored teen cousin.
He would give my mom, like, big bags of pot. It was in the multiple ounces of weight.
Yeah.
Which is a lot when you're, you know, to see when you're that young. I mean, the thing is, though, my mom really never used it. So she accumulated a couple of these bags, but she didn't really accumulate them because I was basically pilfering from them all the time. And so, you know, it was a little bit over a long period of time, but eventually my mom went to look for it and realized that it was gone. And told Walter, and Walter was like, what the hell happened? You know, we had a sit down.
Oh.
Me, him, and my mom, because he apparently was shocked that I was doing this kind of behavior. And he was like, what'd you do? What happened to all that pot? What'd you do with it? And I didn't know what to say, so, and I was kind of embarrassed that I had smoked most of it myself. So I lied, and I said, I sold it to my friends, which was totally untrue. I really just smoked most of it myself, you know.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
It wasn't hilarious at the time. It was the most mortifying, embarrassing thing to happen.
My dad has no memory of this memorable and significant event to my cousin scientist, illustrating how humans' memories of the same event are different and subjective, and reminds me of the meaningful moment in my youth when my older sister told me our parents were pot smugglers, an event she has no memory of.
The older one did that? No, I mean, I it's hard to remember. I mean, pot was, you know, pot was just sort of like a chair. I mean, there was always a lot of it around. And so I guess I gave it to her or them. I just don't remember. I mean, we didn't leave it out, but it was, you know, if anybody, I just gave it away to everybody I knew. That was sort of part of the gig.
Now, twin cousin has a slightly different story than his brother. He also remembers Hi-Fi as the carpenter and remembers tons of pot around their apartment when my dad would visit.
So also there was kind of like the smell of bud, of weed. Like my brother and my mother were recipients of socks full of weed, and it would waft through the house under the doors. And I mean, I guess I vaguely knew what it was, but not really.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my mom blabbed it at some point early on.
Are your memories when you were a child of your uncle visiting my dad, are they fond memories? I mean, did he strike you as overly generous, like wonderfully generous? Was it like surprising?
No, it seemed like it was coming from a very genuine place, you know. Like family.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted things to be good with the East Coast peeps.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's part of the story is fleeing the East Coast because it's so uptight and disgusting.
My dad was fleeing the oppression of city living and old East Coast traditions while simultaneously seeking the center of the cultural arts and music movement, which turned out to be Marin County in the 70s, where the psychedelic pioneers migrated after the Summer of Love kind of ruined San Francisco, according to many psychedelic pioneers. New York City was and still is busy, bustling, a place of business, and its leisure comes in the forms of culture and nightlife rather than nature and hiking. My dad is a nature enthusiast. He's a high-strung Hebe who thrives in a relaxed country setting. So fleeing New York and its hustle-bustle for the laid-back vibes of Marin County in Northern California was a lifesaver for my dad. Now, before this podcast, my dad still hadn't revealed the details of his smuggler life to his New York family. And he still forbids me from sharing the podcast with his older sisters. It wasn't until recently that my dad even mentioned telling Cousin Scientist anything.
As an adult, at some point, I think your dad started insinuating things, but never with any details either. Mm. Like, he would say, oh, I've got some stories to tell you. And I'd be like, well, like what? And he would he'd be like, someday. You know, not now. And I would be like, okay. You know, and I never got a straight story out of him, ever.
Pot, like vodka, tobacco, or beer, reflects the ethos of a subculture. Peace, love, and rock and roll, that's the ethos of the hippies. And cannabis, being the stimulant of choice, fundamentally represents that ethos. Now, my East Coast cousins noticed my dad's fancy shampoo and pot because it wasn't part of their New York City subculture. Cousin Scientist was shocked by Sweet Smell and the naked swimming hippies because he grew up in the Bronx, where there's a dearth of clothing-optional swimming holes. Side note, let it be known, I have always rolled my eyes at naked swimming hippies and would prefer humans wear swimsuits at public swimmeries. So, the question is, what's your subculture's ethos? Write in and let me know, because I love subcultures. You can find me on the social media, Rainbow Valentine Lemur. I'm Rainbow Valentine, and this is Disorganized Crime. Thanks so much for listening. Disorganized Crime, Smuggler's Daughter, is written and recorded by me, Rainbow Valentine. Our producers are Gabby Watts and Taylor Church. Executive producers are Brandon Barr, Brian Lavin, Elsie Crowley, and me at School of Humans, and Connell Byrne and Charles Bryant at iHeartRadio. Our music is by Gabby Lala and Claire Campbell, with original theme by Mark Caron and me. You can follow us online at disorganizedcrimepodcast.com.
Writing our own story, doing as we please. Tamil pious, sleeping princess of the redwood trees. She helps us keep it real. A handshake seals the deal. Grab the stash, seal the meal, and load up these old rigs. Rolling a doobie, young, rich, and groovy. Making it up as we roll along.